So I want you to imagine for a second that you own a piece of a massive, gleaming commercial high rise right in the heart of Riyadh.
Oh, that's a dream, right?
Right. And you get to participate in the entire financial upside of that property. Like, you're collecting a share of the monthly rental income from the corporate tenants, and you're benefiting from the long-term appreciation of the real estate market. But here is the kicker.
Let's hear it.
You didn't need like $10 million to buy in. You didn't have to fly across the world to sign a massive stack of physical paperwork. And you absolutely never have to take a phone call in the middle of the night because the roof on the third floor is leaking.
Yeah, which is really the ultimate promise of this whole technology, isn't it? I mean, gaining all the economic benefit of a massive illiquid asset while completely outsourcing the logistical nightmare of, traditional property management.
Exactly. And for a really long time, that kind of frictionless access felt like science fiction, or at least a privilege reserved strictly for institutional billionaires and massive hedge funds.
Oh, totally. The velvet rope was very much up.
But right now, we're looking at this massive collision between cutting-edge digital technology and ancient traditional real estate law. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to cut straight through the massive amounts of blockchain hype we all constantly hear and answer a highly specific but incredibly relevant question for you.
The big one.
Yeah. Is real estate tokenization actually legal in Saudi Arabia in 2026?
It's basically the multi-million dollar question that a massive wave of investors, both domestic and international, are, trying to confidently answer right now.
Right. And to figure this out, we are relying on a really comprehensive breakdown from the Gamma blog. The source material examines Saudi Vision 2030, the exact intersection where digital assets crash into traditional property laws, and the compliance frameworks that are currently making these new types of investments possible.
It's a really thorough piece of analysis.
It is. And I want to set the tone for you right out of the gate. We are keeping this highly structured and focused on the mechanics. Like, we won't be getting bogged down in impenetrable tech jargon about cryptography or node validation or any of that.
Thankfully.
Right. Instead, we're going to figure out exactly how this digital innovation meets the very real, very physical law.
And, it's taking a step back is essential here. Because before we can even begin to declare if a tokenized building is legal or illegal, we have to establish exactly what you're actually buying.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you think you're buying a physical brick, the legal answer is vastly different than if you're buying, say, a line of code.
So let's demystify the digital brick. The source material makes this crucial distinction right away. It says tokenization is essentially representing the economic value of a real-world asset via digital units on a blockchain ledger.
Right, the economic value. That's key.
Yeah, and the physical property itself remains completely unchanged, and it is held by a legal entity. But I want to push back on how people visualize this because I think the marketing often really confuses people.
Oh, the marketing is definitely part of the problem.
Right. So is buying a token just holding a digital deed to a specific physical brick or like a specific window on the fourth floor? Or is it more like holding a casino chip that represents a share of the whole building's profit pool?
It's entirely the casino chip scenario.
Okay.
You aren't claiming ownership of the third window on the fourth floor, and the building certainly doesn't get like uploaded to a cloud server somewhere.
Yeah.
What's fascinating here is that this specific nuance, the absolute legal separation between the physical ownership of the dirt and the economic participation in the asset, is really the engine that makes the whole system viable in the real world.
Let's actually walk through the mechanics of that separation. Because if I'm a learner listening to this, I want to know how my crypto wallet actually connects to a physical building. The source mentions the physical property is held by a legal entity. We're essentially talking about an SPV, right? A special purpose vehicle.
Exactly. An SPE.
So for the listener, an SPV is basically just a pop-up company, kind of like an LLC, created specifically to hold the deed to this one single building, right?
That is the perfect way to describe it. The SPV is a legally registered company in Saudi Arabia, and its only job, its entire reason for existing, is to own that specific commercial high-rise.
Got it.
So the SPV has a bank account. It pays the local property taxes, it hires the property management firm, and like we said earlier, it handles the literal leaky roofs.
So where does the blockchain actually come in? I mean, if the tenant on the 20th floor pays their rent in traditional fiat currency, how does that translate into a yield in my digital wallet?
That is where the smart contract bridges the gap.
Okay, how?
So the SPV collects the rent in Saudi riyals. The management platform then takes that fiat currency, converts it into a stablecoin, and and a smart contract automatically distributes that digital yield to the wallets of everyone holding a token.
It's proportionate to their share.
Proportionate to their share, exactly.
Yeah.
The token you hold is essentially a digital share in that SPV. You're interacting purely with the financial layer while the SPV interacts with the physical layer.
So I am completely disconnected from the actual dirt. Like, if the building somehow burns down, my token isn't a digital claim to a piece of the rubble. It's just a share in a now distressed SPV that hopefully has good insurance.
That is the harsh, realistic truth of it.
Right.
Which is exactly why understanding the legal structure is so vital. You are an economic participant in a legal entity.
Okay, well, that brings up a massive lingering question for me.
Go for it.
If I'm just buying shares in a company that owns a building, aren't we just reinventing a REIT? You know, a real estate investment trust? Just with extra steps and flashy tech buzzwords, like, why do we even need the blockchain at all?
It's a completely fair critique, and it's one that traditional finance brings up all the time. But the difference really lies in the friction and the mechanics of distribution.
What do you mean by friction?
Well, traditional REITs have massive administrative overhead. They require minimum investments that price out average people. And trading shares, that can take days to settle.
Oh, right. It's not instant.
Not at all. But by using a blockchain and smart contracts, an SPV can fractionalize a $50 million building into $50 tokens. And the smart contract automates the compliance, the dividend payouts, and the trading settlement.
And it does all that instantly.
Instantly.
Yeah.
24/7. Without needing an army of accountants.
Yeah.
So it takes the concept of a REIT and just completely supercharges the efficiency.
Which brings us right to the regulator's lens. Because historically, governments are not thrilled when tech moves faster than the law, especially when it starts supercharging financial instruments, you know.
No, they usually aren't. They tend to pump the brakes.
Right. And under Saudi Vision 2030, the source notes that regulators are modernizing, but they are incredibly cautious. They haven't rushed out to write a bunch of standalone blockchain laws, which I found really fascinating.
They haven't. And that is a very deliberate strategic choice. Rather than creating a parallel legal system for crypto, which usually just creates loopholes for bad actors, they are forcing the technology to fit into existing frameworks.
Okay, so who's handling what?
Well, the Capital Market Authority, the CMA, regulates anything resembling a security. And the Saudi Central Bank, SAMA, oversees the fintech infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. If they are just relying on the CMA, does this mean the regulators don't actually care about the blockchain part at all?
Pretty much.
Like, they just look at the token, see that it promises a future profit based on a property manager's efforts, and just say, congratulations, you're a security. Welcome to our jurisdiction.
You've essentially just described the legal principle of substance over form. The regulators are evaluating the underlying investment structure, not the shiny delivery mechanism.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right. If it walks like an investment fund and talks like an investment fund, it gets regulated like an investment fund.
Mm.
Whether it's recorded on a piece of paper in a filing cabinet or on a decentralized ledger.
I love that approach because it completely strips away the mystique of the technology. But I want to dig into SAMA for a second, the central bank. The source mentions they use regulatory sandboxes.
Yes, sandboxes are crucial here.
How does a sandbox actually work in this context? Because I imagine you don't just launch a tokenized high-rise on day one and just hope it doesn't break the banking system.
No, definitely not. A regulatory sandbox is a controlled, live testing environment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a platform wants to launch that automated rent distribution smart contract we talked about earlier.
Okay.
SAMA will put them in the sandbox. This means the platform is allowed to operate with real money and real users, but under very strict limits.
Like what kind of limits?
Maybe a cap on the total funds they can handle,
hmm.
or a limit on the number of retail investors allowed in. And SAMA watches closely. They want to see the mechanics in action.
Hmm.
Can the blockchain handle thousands of micro-dividend payouts without crashing? Do the anti-money laundering checks actually work in real time? If the platform proves it can operate safely without introducing systemic risk, then SAMA grants them a full license to scale.
So it's essentially a beta test with the government looking over your shoulder.
Exactly that. It allows innovation to happen without risking the broader financial stability of the country.
All right, so the financial side is locked down. The CMA ensures the math adds up and the investment structure is sound. But what about the actual physical dirt the building sits on?
Ah, the physical law.
Yeah. Can a digital token magically bypass strict national real estate laws? Because here's where it gets really interesting. We have this futuristic digital engine, the blockchain, capable of moving millions of dollars across borders in 3 seconds.
Right.
But it seems like it still has to obey the local speed limit of national property law.
The digital engine absolutely has to obey the local speed limit. The token does not and cannot bypass physical law. This is a very dangerous assumption a lot of global investors make when they just hear the word crypto.
Let's push this analogy to the edge cases, because the Gamma blog is very explicit here. In Saudi Arabia, Saudi nationals and registered entities have fewer property restrictions, but foreign ownership has strict conditions.
Very strict conditions, yes.
Right. There are certain geographic zones like Mecca and Medina where foreign ownership of property is heavily restricted or outright prohibited. So let's say a foreign investor in London sees a tokenized building in a restricted zone.
Okay, tracking.
They have a crypto wallet, they have the funds. What actually happens when they try to buy that token? Does the smart contract literally act as a digital bouncer and reject the transaction?
If the platform is compliant, the smart contract will absolutely reject the transaction. This is where the integration of KYC, Know Your Customer protocols, meets the blockchain.
How does that work in practice?
Well, when you sign up for a regulated tokenization platform, your wallet address is essentially whitelisted based on your verified identity and your nationality.
So the smart contract checks the speed limit before it lets the car move.
Precisely. If the legal entity holding the property is not allowed to have foreign shareholders for a specific building, the smart contract is hard-coded to only allow transfers between wallets whitelisted as Saudi nationals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if a foreign wallet tries to execute a buy order, the code simply says transaction failed. The physical law is completely baked into the digital execution.
I can hear the crypto purists screaming from here. I mean, doesn't this heavy-handed regulation defeat the entire borderless, permissionless, you know, code is law dream of blockchain?
They definitely aren't happy about it.
Right. If we are just hard-coding government restrictions into the tokens, what is the point?
Well, it might dash the hopes of speculators who just wanted a regulatory loophole to sneak into restricted markets.
Yeah.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, this red tape is actually a feature, not a bug.
A feature for who? The government.
A feature for the serious investor.
Think about it from the perspective of the listener. If you are going to invest your hard-earned money into a tokenized piece of commercial real estate, your biggest risk isn't the blockchain getting hacked. What is it then?
It's the legal entity holding the property getting dissolved or seized because it violated local laws.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Right. By forcing the digital tokens to respect the local speed limits and by ensuring the SPV has clear, legally recognized title to the land, the asset becomes anchored in real-world legal reality.
It makes it real.
Exactly. It transitions the whole concept from wild, unsecured crypto speculation into a legitimate, institutional-grade investment.
So the friction is the safety net. Because if the platform wasn't enforcing those physical property laws, your digital token would eventually become worthless anyway the moment the local authorities crack down on the illegal SPV.
Exactly. The compliance isn't just about, you know, appeasing regulators. It is the core mechanism that protects the underlying value of the token.
So what does this all mean for the listener? Let's make this highly actionable. We know that strict financial laws from the CMA apply, and we know that physical property laws and foreign ownership restrictions apply. But if I'm a learner, and I'm out there on the internet tomorrow looking at a brand new, slick website offering fractional ownership of a commercial building in Riyadh, What is my ultimate red flag?
The ultimate red flag is a lack of transparency regarding the legal mechanics.
Mm.
I mean, anyone can build a beautiful website and talk about their revolutionary algorithm.
True.
But the source highlights that true compliance requires massive operational oversight. They actually use Osol Gamma as a prime example of a platform doing this correctly by aligning digital access with traditional real estate fundamentals.
Right. The Gamma breakdown notes that these compliant platforms have to detail exactly how the properties are managed. They explain the math on how income is calculated, and they show strict protocols for handling funds.
Yes, it's all out in the open.
So in practice, if I'm looking at a website that spends like 90% of its time hyping up its proprietary blockchain network and zero time explaining who actually holds the deed to the building, that's my cue to run.
That is your cue to run in the opposite direction. This raises an important question you should always ask. Can I literally look up the commercial registration of the SPV holding the property?
Just verify it yourself.
Yeah. If a platform is legitimate, they won't hide behind tech jargon. They will proudly display their CMA sandbox license or their regulatory status. They will show you the SPV structure.
They want you to see it.
Exactly. The burden of proof is entirely on the platform to demonstrate they are a strictly regulated real estate tool, not just a crypto offering wearing a real estate mask.
That distinction is incredibly sharp. If they can't point to the specific legal entity, the token is just thin air. So let's pull all of these complex threads together. We started this deep dive with a very specific mission for 2026. Is real estate tokenization actually legal in Saudi Arabia?
And the answer, as we've explored, isn't just a simple yes or no.
It rarely is when you are trying to map decentralized technology onto sovereign physical land.
Very true.
The real answer is, it is legal if. It is legal if the investment structure fully complies with the Capital Market Authority's financial regulations, treating the token like a serious security and utilizing the regulatory sandboxes to prove it works.
Yeah.
And it is legal if the underlying SPV holding the actual dirt fully adheres to Saudi property laws, using smart contracts to enforce things like foreign ownership restrictions.
The overarching theme here really is substance over technology. Regulators welcome the efficiency of the blockchain, but they absolutely will not compromise on traditional market integrity and property rights. Those are the two pillars making this possible.
And I want to remind you, the listener, why we dug into this specific source material today. Because on the surface, this might have sounded like a niche exploration of Saudi real estate law.
Sure, it could sound that way.
But what you actually just got was a masterclass in how global governments are successfully adapting to the future. You are watching the blueprint of how a nation forces wild, decentralized, borderless technologies to sit down, behave, and play by traditional financial rules.
It really is the domestication of the blockchain.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, it proves that technological innovation and strict government regulation don't have to be mutually exclusive. They can actually reinforce one another to build a much stronger, more accessible market.
Which leaves us with a pretty massive and, frankly, a bit of a provocative thought to end on.
Let's hear it.
The source material notes that tokenized real estate is going to become a crucial way to access property markets moving forward. The blueprint is there, the sandboxes are running, and the legal precedent is firmly set. So I want you to mull this over. If the tokenization of physical buildings is working this seamlessly under existing Saudi laws, what comes next?
Well, if the mechanism for separating physical ownership from economic participation works for a skyscraper,
right,
there's really no technical reason it stops there.
Right. What other massive, historically illiquid, real-world assets in the kingdom could be tokenized next using this exact same legal blueprint?
The possibilities are huge.
Could we see the tokenization of national infrastructure projects? Could we see multi-billion dollar investments in massive energy grids or entirely new desalination plants broken down into digital units for everyday investors?
It's definitely on the horizon.
The legal and technological foundation has already been poured. The speed limits have been established. It's just a matter of what they decide to build on top of it next. So the next time you picture owning a piece of that massive commercial high-rise without the millions of dollars or the leaky roof, remember, it's not a video game anymore. It's just a matter of finding the right legal entity. Until next time, keep digging deeper.